But fortunately, we didn't look too suspicious. Other pilots had gathered out in the hallway, confused by the warnings. We scrambled into our seats, me clutching the backpack with my contraband drone inside. I peeked into it and was shocked to see the drone. Shouldn't it be invisible? I quickly zipped the pack up and tapped to it, engage lunch hologram, version 2 empty container. Holographic unit offline, it tapped back. Explosion damaged system. Sweat trickled down the sides of my face. I was exposed. If guards demanded to inspect my bag. Eventually, the warning klaxons turned off, and I felt the weights and measures dock at Starsight. My trepidation only grew. Could I find a way to stow the drone for now on the ship? Come back for it later? There wasn't even a chance. We were ordered to make our way to the shuttle bay. I walked among a huddle of nervous pilots, noting the numerous guards in the hallway. I searched frantically for a way out and remembered the second identity that MBOT had programmed into my bracelet, the nondescript Dione hologram. Could I use that now somehow? It seemed unlikely. A mysterious Dione appearing in my place would be just as suspicious. So I slunk along, sure each step of the way that the hammer was going to fall on me. I was so focused on that, I didn't notice the irregularity until I was almost at the shuttle bay. Vapor. I couldn't smell her, and the other pilots didn't leave an opening for her like they normally did. I entered the docking bay and waited, trying to see if I could smell her. A second later, she wafted across me, a sharp smell of lemons. The same scent I'd smelled earlier in the hallway outside of engineering. She was there, in the hallway. I pulled my pack closer. Vapor? I asked. Come with me, her voice snapped. Now. I winced and, in a panic, reached out with my mind. Maybe I could hyperjump away, then find some way to come back for. No. The directions to detritus in my mind would end up with me floating out in orbit with no spacesuit, I was suddenly sure. I was trapped. Vapor, I said. I.
Now, Alanik!
I followed her scent through the room, which was actually easier than it might sound. Just as I'd worried, the guards were searching each pilot before they got onto their shuttles. An obvious precaution when a drone had been found spying here. I pulled my pack closer, sweating as I trailed behind Vapor's sharp lemon scent. We approached a sleek-looking shuttle. The door opened. Kuna, shrouded in dark robes, sat inside.
Alanik, they said. I believe we have some matters to discuss.
I glanced back at the rest of my flight. They were all getting in line to be searched. Morimer had turned toward me, head cocked. Other guards were approaching me, one pointing. I only had one option. I climbed into the shuttle with Kuna. Chapter 33. I clutched the pack to my chest as the door closed, and I was struck again by the overwhelming scent of lemons, which then shifted slowly to cinnamon. The two guards made it to the door, and one rapped on the shuttle window. Kuna pressed a button on a control panel and the window descended.
Minister Kuna, one asked, we're supposed to search everyone.
I doubt those orders include heads of departments, soldier, Kuna said, then hit the button again, closing the window. They gestured to the pilot.
The shuttle took off, then left the bay, flying toward the city proper. The moment we got outside of the weights and measures, a chipper voice spoke in my ear.
Spencer, MBOT said. How did it go? Did the drone work? I can sense its signal with you. You recovered it.
I tapped out on my bracelet. Not now. Kuna laced their fingers, then finally made a relieved gesture with two of them.
No call to return, they said. We're in luck. My authority was enough to not be questioned.
Then they held out their hand, waving for me to surrender the pack. I refused,
pulling it closer.
Vapor? Kuna asked.
It's a drone,
said the familiar, disembodied voice.
She was actually quite clever in how she retrieved it, as she shot off its weapon first. It will be days before anyone puts together that the remaining debris only includes pieces of a destructor pistol.
I tried glaring at Vapor, which was hard because I didn't exactly know where she was. Kuna reached into their pocket and unfolded a sheet of paper. They held it out to me, and I narrowed my eyes, regarding it with suspicion. Finally, I took one careful hand off my pack and accepted the paper.
What does it say?
Embot asked.
Spencer, I'm having trouble following this conversation.
I didn't dare respond to him as I pulled off my pin and held it to the paper, getting a translation. It was a list of communications? The short messages were dated in order, starting about a week ago. 1001.17. Minister Kuna, while we respect your willingness to communicate and acknowledge the relative strength of the superiority, we cannot release private information about our messenger. 1001.23. After continued analysis of the brief messages sent to us via our emissary, Alanik, we of the Unity of Erdale are concerned for her safety. We have no plans to send further pilots to you. 1001.28. After continued suspicion concerning our messenger's safety, we must cut off communication with you and the superiority until such time as she returns to us. A cold chill ran down my spine. Kuna was in communication with the people on Alanik's home planet. Embot and I had talked to them a few times after our first message, trying to play for time. It looked like they'd decided to step away from the problem entirely by ignoring us both.
Your people are obviously stalling for you, Kuna said.
I can see it clearly now.
The Erdale never intended to join the superiority, did they? You are a spy, sent here exclusively to steal hyperdrive technology.
It took a moment for that to sink in. Kuna didn't know I was human. They thought I was a spy for Alanik's people. And scud, it sure did look like that from Kuna's perspective.
What I can't figure out, Kuna said, is why you would risk so much, considering that you already obviously know the secret. Clearly, your people know not just how to use a cytonic like you as a hyperdrive, but have created a secondary method, the same one we use.
What? I opened my mouth to say I had no idea what Kuna was talking about, but then, for once in my life, thought before I spoke. For some reason, Kuna thought I already had the secret. So, why not play along? I might not have trained for this, but I was the one who was here, and my people needed me to be more than I'd been before.
We couldn't be sure that your methods were the same as ours, I said. We thought it worth the risk, particularly once we realized I would have a chance to infiltrate superiority warships and secret projects.
You have been playing me all along, Kuna said. You now know about the weapon, the location of our training maze, the infighting among our departments. I would be impressed if I weren't so angry.
Wisest choice on my part seemed to be silence. Outside the window, we passed into a part of town with grand buildings, built with domes and large gardens. The government quarter? I was pretty sure that was where we were. The shuttle landed beside a large rectangular building, one with few windows, more austere and grim than the others nearby. Kuna held out their hand again toward my pack. I realized that I didn't have much choice. I was unarmed and in their power. The only thing I had going for me was the fact that Kuna, remarkably, thought that I knew what I was doing. I held up the pack. I don't need it anymore, I said. This conversation was confirmation enough. Kuna took it anyway, then fished out the drone and looked it over.
One of our own, they said. A modified cleaning drone?
These are impressive security devices attached to it. I didn't know your people had access to this kind of technology.
Kuna looked toward the place where Vapor hung.
That looks like Figment technology, Vapor said softly. The kind that was forbidden us after the war. I've seen old ships with those markings on them.
Figment technology? Embot? I said nothing, though my heart skipped a beat when Kuna fished in the shuttle armrest for a cord, then connected the drone's memory to a monitor on the back of the seat in front of us. Trying to keep my voice calm, I spoke. Drone, authorize playback of video starting from the moment I turned you on.
Confirmed, the drone said.
AI? Kuna asked, baring their teeth in a look of shock. Not self-aware, AI, I said quickly. Just a basic program that can follow orders.
Still, so dangerous.
The screen turned on, displaying a view of me, wearing Alanik's face in the stall of the bathroom. Fast forward, I said, until 2 minutes before the hyperjump back to Starsight.
Confirmed.
I waited, hands clenching, as the view changed to what had to be the engine room. It looked surprisingly like an office. No hyperdrive apparatus that I could spot, only chairs and monitors with Dione's in uniform working them. I eyed Kuna. Were they really just going to let this play? My heartbeat increased as audio sounded from the recording.
All pilots are on board and personnel secured, Winzik's voice said over the room's PA. Engineering, you may proceed with the hyperjump back to Starsight Regional Space.
Understood, said one of the Dione's on the screen, a crimson, somewhat chubby individual. Preparing for hyperjump.
They hit a button. Nothing happened. Elsewhere, at that moment, I had been straining to use my cytonic senses to interfere. It was surreal, watching what had been happening a few rooms over from where I'd been waiting. Several of the Dione's looked agitated, speaking softly to one another. The chubby one hit the comm button.
Bridge, we have another hyperdrive malfunction. It's those cytonics on board. They're creating an unconscious interference with the hyperdrives.
Another Dione got up and walked to the wall. They opened a hatch there and pulled something out. I leaned forward, my breath catching as I saw what they removed. A metal cage. And inside of it, a bright yellow slug with blue spines. Chapter 34. A slug. Scud. Scud! It made so much sense. The entry about Doomslug species on the datanet, it had said they were dangerous. That was a lie. The superiority just wanted to make certain that if anyone saw one, they'd think it venomous and stay away. Report any sightings to authorities immediately.
Try a replacement, a voice said on the recording.
Spensa, Embot said in my ear. What is going on?
Loading one now. Can we do something about this? It causes so much paperwork.
The Dione's removed the hyperdrive from a unit beside the wall. It was another slug, just like Doomslug. They slid the new one in and activated the hyperdrive. This time it worked. I could almost hear that scream in my mind again, the high-pitched wail, the scream of the hyperdrive, made by the creatures they were using to teleport. Drone. End video, I whispered. I'd been expecting something horrific, like the surgically removed brains of cytonics, but why should sapient beings be the only ones to have these powers? Didn't it make sense that some other creatures might develop a means of teleporting through the nowhere? I thought of all the times I'd found Doomslug in places where I didn't expect her. All the times I'd noted in passing that I rarely saw her move, but that she always seemed to be able to go places quickly when I wasn't looking. Then, one final understanding came crashing down on me. A seemingly simple phrase from the datanet entry. Often found near species of fungi. Embot.
When he had awoken, one of the only things he'd had in his databanks was an open table for cataloging local types of mushrooms. He'd fixated on it, knowing it was important, but not why. His pilot had been looking for hyperdrive slugs.
"How?" I asked Kuna, trying to cover up my shock at all this. "How did you know I had a hyperdrive slug?"
"I followed you,"
Vapor said, making me jump. I still sometimes forgot she was around.
"When you went out with Morimar that day in the water garden."
Doomslug had met me at the door that day.
Scud.
She'd been acting so strange and lethargic since we'd arrived. Was that because Starsight's cytonic inhibitors interfered with her powers? Kuna unplugged the drone, then placed it back into my pack. Then they laced their fingers, watching me with a thoughtful alien expression.
"This causes problems," they said, "beyond anything you likely understand."
I had hopes. They made a dismissive gesture, then opened the door to the shuttle.
"Come."
"Where?" I said, suspicious.
"I want to show you exactly what the superiority is, Alanik,"
Kuna said, taking my backpack and climbing out. I didn't trust that dark expression, marked by a creepy smile. I waited behind, smelling cinnamon.
"You can trust them, Alanik,"
Vapor told me. "Of course you'd say that," I replied. "But can I trust you?"
"I haven't told anyone what you really are, have I?"
she whispered. I looked sharply toward the empty space where she resided. Finally, feeling overwhelmed, I climbed out.
"Kuna," Vapor said loudly from behind me. "Do you need me any longer?"
"No. You can return to your main mission."
"Affirmative,"
she said, and the shuttle door closed. Kuna started toward the building without waiting to see if I'd follow. Why turn their back on me? What if I were dangerous? I hurried up beside them. "I wasn't Vapor's main mission?" I asked, nodding back toward the shuttle as it took off.
"You were a stroke of luck," Kuna said. "She's actually there to watch Winsick."
Kuna reached the door, which had a window and a security guard inside. They nodded to Kuna, but then bared their teeth in a Dione scowl at me.
"I bring this one with me, by my authority," Kuna said.
"I'll need to note it, Minister. It's very unusual."
Kuna waited for them to do some paperwork. I took the chance to tap a short message on my bracelet. "Embot, still read me?"
"Yes," he said in my ear, "but I'm very confused."
Doomslug is hyperdrive. If I die, get to Detritus. Tell them.
"What?" Embot said. "Spensa, I can't do that."
"Heroes don't choose their trials."
"I can't even fly myself, let alone hyperjump."
"Slug is hyperdrive."
"But?"
The guard finally opened the door. I stepped into the building after Kuna, and as I'd worried from its fortress-like exterior, it had shielding to prevent spying. So Embot's voice vanished. The hallway inside was empty of people, and Kuna's footwear clicked on the floor as we walked to a door marked Observation Room. Inside was a small chamber with a glass wall overlooking a larger room, 2 stories tall, with metal walls. I stepped up to the window, noting the markings on several of the walls. That strange language, I thought. The same one I saw in the Delver Maze, and in the tunnels back on Detritus. Kuna settled down in a chair near the glass window, placing my backpack beside the seat. I remained standing.
"You have the power to destroy us," Kuna said softly. "Winsick worries about Delvers. Politicians argue about pockets of aggressive aliens. But I have always worried about a danger more nefarious, our own short-sightedness."
I frowned, looking at them.
"We couldn't keep the secret of the hyperdrive forever," Kuna said. "In truth, it shouldn't have outlasted the human wars.
We endured a dozen close calls when the secrets started to leak. Our strange hold on interstellar communication was always enough, just barely, to keep the truth contained.
You won't keep this secret much longer, I said. It's going to get out.
I know, Kuna said. Haven't you been listening? They nodded toward the window. A set of doors down below opened, and a pair of Dionnes entered, pulling someone by the arms. I recognized them. It was Golza the Burl, the gorilla alien who had been kicked out of the pilot program way back after the test, then had been protesting against the superiority. I heard that the superiority made a deal with the protesters, I said.
Winzik was called in to handle the issue, Kuna replied. His department has been gaining too much authority. He claims to have negotiated a deal where the dissidents turned over their leader. I can't track any longer how much of what he says is true and how much is false.
Those Dionnes, I thought, noting the brown-striped clothing they wore. I saw some like them cleaning up after the protesters vanished.
This Burl has been in custody since then, Kuna said, nodding to Golza. Some fear that the incident on the weights and measures today was caused by revolutionaries, so the exile has been moved up. And I have little doubt that Winzik will seek other ways to use your attack on us to further his goals.
Below, one of the Dionne technicians typed on a console at the side of the room. The center of the room shimmered, and then something appeared, a black sphere the size of a person's head. It seemed to suck all light into it as it floated there. It was pure darkness, an absolute blackness that I knew intimately. The nowhere. Somehow, they had opened up a hole into the nowhere. The Kitson had mentioned to me that the superiority, and the human empires as well, had mined a clivity stone from the nowhere. I knew they had portals into the place, but still, seeing that dark sphere affected me on a primal level. That was a darkness that should not exist, a darkness beyond the mere lack of light, a wrongness. They lived in there. I suspected what would come next, but was still horrified when it happened. The guards took the struggling prisoner and forced their face to touch the dark sphere. The protester began to stretch, then was absorbed into the darkness. The technician collapsed the sphere. As everyone left, I spun on Kuna. Why? I demanded. Why show me this?
Because, Kuna said. Before your stunt today, you were my best hope at stopping this abomination.
You seriously expect me to believe that a superiority official cares what happens to lesser species? I spat the words, perhaps too fervently. I should have been political, kept my emotions in check, tried to get Kuna to talk. But I was mad, furious. I'd just been forced to watch an exile, maybe even an execution. I was mad at myself for getting caught, frustrated to finally know the secret to hyperdrives, to be so close to bringing the secret back to my people, only to be threatened by Kuna. That was why they'd brought me here, of course, to warn me what awaited me if I didn't obey. Kuna stood up. I was short compared to average humans, so Kuna towered over me as they walked to the glass, then rested a blue hand against it.
You think of us as being of one mind, they said, which is the exact flaw held by many in the superiority itself. Presumption. You may choose not to believe it, Alanik, but my entire purpose has been to change the way my people view other species. Once the secret of hyperdrives escapes our grasp, we will need something new to keep us together. We won't be able to rely on our monopoly on travel. We need to be able to offer something else. Kuna turned toward me and smiled, that same creepy, off-putting smile. This time it struck me, and I realized something. Had I ever seen any other Dionnes try to smile?
It wasn't a Dione expression. They pulled their lips tight into a line to express joy, and they bared their teeth to express dislike. They gestured with their hands sometimes, like the Krell. I couldn't think of any of the others, Morimer included, ever smiling.
You smile, I said.
Isn't this facial expression a sign of friendship among your people? Kuna asked. I've noticed you have similar expressions to humans. I've practiced for the day when I get to speak with them and offer a hand of peace. I thought the same expressions might work on you. They smiled again, and this time I saw something new in it. Not a creepiness, but an unfamiliarity. What I had interpreted as a sign of smugness had been an attempt to put me at ease. A failed attempt, but the only sign I could remember in my entire time here of a Dione trying to use one of our expressions. Saints and stars. I'd built my entire gut response to this person on the fact that they couldn't smile right.
Winzik and I conceived the Delver Resistance Project together, but with very different motives, Kuna said. He saw a way to get access to a true, actively piloted starfighter corps again. I saw something different. I saw a force of lesser species serving the superiority, protecting it. Perhaps it is foolish imagining, but I saw in my mind's eye the day when a Delver might come, and a person like you, or the Kitsen, or some other species, saved us. I saw a change in my people, a moment when they began to realize that some aggression is useful, that the different ways species act is a strength of our union, not a flaw in it. And so, I encouraged you to join us. They waved at the room that had held the black portal. The superiority is deceptively weak. We exile that which doesn't match our ideal of non-aggression. We encourage species to be more and more like us before they can join. And there are good ideals among our people, peace, prosperity for all. But at the cost of individuality, that we must find a way to change.
They rested their fingers on the window again.
We have grown complacent, timid. I fear that a little aggression, a little strife, might be exactly what we need. Or else we will fall to the first wolf that sneaks past the gates.
I believed them. Scud, I believed Kuna was sincere. But could I trust my own assessment? The fact that I'd so grossly misread their expressions reinforced this idea. I was among aliens. They were people with real love and emotions, but they also, by definition, wouldn't do things the same way humans did. Who could I trust? Kuna, Vapor, Morimer, Hesho? Did I know enough to trust any of them? It felt like a person could spend a lifetime studying other species and still get this sort of thing wrong. Indeed, Kuna's attempts at smiling were proof of that exact idea. And still, I found myself reaching over and pushing back my sleeve. I undid the little latch on my bracelet that kept me from pushing the button accidentally. Then, taking a deep breath, I deactivated my hologram. Chapter 35. Kuna's eyes bulged practically out of their head as they stared at me. Then they bared their teeth, shying back. What? They demanded. What is this? I was never Alanique, I said. I took her place after she crashed on my planet. Then I stuck out my hand. My name is Spensa. You said you were waiting to hold out your hand to a human, in peace. Well, here I am. It might have been the craziest thing I'd ever done. Honestly, I'm not sure I could explain why I did it. I just realized that I couldn't necessarily trust my gut when it came to aliens. Their habits, expressions, and mannerisms wouldn't match my expectations. This was different, though. This wasn't me reacting by instinct to something an alien did. This was a choice. If there was even a chance that Kuna was sincere, it could mean an end to the war. It could mean safety for my people. I wasn't certain if this was what the heroes from Grand-Grand's stories would have done, but it was what I did. In that moment, taking that risk, accepting that hope. Kuna, though they leaned back at the same time, took my hand in theirs. I guessed that part of them reviled the idea of touching me. Still, they did force themselves to do it. Kuna might use terms like lesser species, but I believed that they were sincerely trying. They looked at me closer, still holding onto my hand.
How? I don't understand.
Holograms, I said. A portable one in my bracelet.
We don't have technology to create a projector so small, Kuna said. But it was rumored that the humans did during the First War, during their alliance with the Figments. Amazing. The communications from Alanik's home planet. Do they know about you?
I told them, but I don't know that they believe me. I've mostly been stalling them.
Amazing, Kuna repeated. You mustn't show anyone else. It could be a disaster.
They pulled their hand back and, it seemed unconsciously, wiped it on their robes. I tried not to be offended.
You are from the Shell Planet? Kuna asked. With the defensive platforms?
Detritus, I said. Yeah.
I fought for you until I was hoarse, Kuna said. In the closed Senate meetings, when there were arguments for extermination. I didn't believe. You're standing here, talking to me? Amazing. You've been on Starsight for weeks. Have you killed anyone? By accident, I mean?
No, I said. We're really not like that. Mostly, I've spent my time here trying to figure out which of the 17 restrooms I'm supposed to use. Do you know how confusing that can be without some instructions? Kuna drew their lips to a line. I smiled back. They walked around me.
Truly spectacular. We have watched you all these years, but know so little. The interference those platforms cause, you see. Still, we blasted you into what was practically a Stone Age, and less than a century later, you already have hyperdrives again. I'm not sure whether to be impressed or intimidated.
Right now, let's call it a draw, I said. I touched my bracelet, turning my hologram back on so I looked like Alanik again. Kuna, Winzik is crazier than you think. Braid told me some of his plans. They're trying to recruit Alanik to join some kind of secret cytonic group they have. They think they can control the Delvers.
Surely you exaggerate, Kuna said. The program we've developed uses a weapon to distract Delvers. Our analysis proves that if they go too long in our realm without consuming a planet, they eventually fade. What we will try to do is not so much control them as keep them distracted from population centers long enough that they leave us.
Yeah, well, there's more, I said. You're not the only one worried about the superiority losing control once everyone knows about hyperdrive slugs. Winzik plans to use the threat of a Delver attack to keep everyone in line. Kuna bared their teeth.
If this is true, they said, then I have a great deal more work to do. But you needn't worry. Our program is just in the beginning stages. I will search for the truth and move to counter Winzik's political aspirations. He is not so powerful yet that he cannot be stopped.
All right. I'll see what I can do to get the human scourge to back down.
I can't let you take that drone.
At least let me take the sensor unit I installed, I said. My ship needs that. I looked to Kuna. Please, let me go, Kuna. I'll fly back to Detritus and persuade my people that someone among the Krell is willing to talk about peace. I think they'll listen.
What would happen to Winzik's power if suddenly his department wasn't needed? What if the human scourge became an ally to the superiority instead of an enemy?
There is a long way to go for that to happen, Kuna said. But, yes, I can imagine it.
A deal then, between you and me.
Kuna hesitated, then put their hand out toward me again.
Or a deal to perhaps make a deal.
I took it. Then I pulled my lips to a line. Kuna, in turn, smiled. Well, it was kind of a smile. A worthy effort, anyway. I retrieved the sensor and hologram unit I'd attached to the drone and put them in my flight suit pockets, but left the drone itself in the backpack. Kuna led me to the door, and I tried not to think about the poor alien who had been exiled. I couldn't let myself feel responsible for what had happened to them. I just had to do what I could. What would happen if we really did make peace? Would that mean no more need for starfighters? I found that difficult to believe. The Delvers were still out there, right? There would be battles. There were always battles. It still felt a little odd to have me, of all people, be the one who took the first steps toward peace.
I can take you by shuttle to your embassy, Kuna said, walking me through the security door to the open air. Then I can fill out the proper paperwork, indicating that Alanique is returning to her people. I don't know how we'll make this work after that, but...
Kuna trailed off as a military shuttle, it looked like the same one we'd flown there in, zipped down out of the air and landed with a hasty thump right in the middle of the grass, ignoring the farther launch pad. The door slammed open, but no one was inside. I immediately smelled cinnamon.
Hurry, Vapor's voice said. Alanique, we've been mobilized.
What? I demanded. Mobilized how?
Our flight is being sent into battle. I think a Delver has been spotted.
Chapter 36. Our shuttle raced through the sky above Starsight, flying at an emergency altitude beneath the rest of the traffic. Vapor, I said. I don't know if this is relevant to me any longer.
The possible appearance of a galaxy-wide threat isn't relevant? She asked.
Do we know that is what happened? I asked.
Here, watch, Vapor said, smelling floral at the moment.
She activated the monitor on the back of the seat in front of us. It played the emergency message, one sent by Winzik himself. Pilots, he said, using the most firm of hand gestures, both hands made as fists. An enemy threatens Starsight. This is not a drill. I realize your training has been brief, but the need is dire. Report to the weights and measures for immediate deployment. He doesn't say it's a Delver, I said. It smells of politics.
Actually, that's what I'm afraid of, Vapor said.
Listen, I said. Vapor, I showed myself to Kuna, my real self. The two of us decided to find a way to make peace between our peoples. I think that might be more important than whatever is happening here with Winzik. Vapor's scent changed to something more akin to onions.
We're already at peace with your people. Why would you and Kuna have to agree to that?
My real people. You said you know what I am, a human.
Yes, Vapor said. I put it together. Your planet, Redawn. You've been hiding a human enclave there, haven't you? They never really evacuated, but remained hidden among you. That's why you never joined the superiority. You've been worried we'd find out about the humans.
Oh, I thought. That was actually a reasonable guess. Utterly wrong, but more reasonable than the truth was in many ways.
I wondered why you used so many human expressions and mannerisms, Vapor continued. More than I thought was natural for your people's supposed past. And your scent. You're part human. Aren't you, Alanique? A species mix?
That explains your cytonics. Humans always were very talented in that regard.
The reality is a little less complicated than you think, I said to Vapor. Ask Kuna, but Vapor, I need to get back to my ship.
Alanik,
Vapor said, her scent going to something more like rain.
I need you right now. I've been assigned to watch Winzik, and I don't think even Kuna is aware of how ambitious he is. You're the best pilot I have, and I need you to be ready to join me. In case.
In case what?
In case this isn't about a Delver. Let's just say there are elements in the government who are very worried about Winzik's growing power and his access to pilots who don't share core superiority values.
Again, I was caught in the middle of something I barely understood. She's worried about a coup, isn't she? That's why she was assigned to become a pilot, to make sure Winzik isn't trying to seize control of the superiority. Where did that leave me? I had the secret. I needed to get home with it. Nothing else mattered, did it? I used my bracelet to open a communication to Embot, who should be able to hear me now that I was out of the governmental building. My reply was a quiet sound transferred via my earpiece. Click, 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 click. Our shuttle tore along the docks, joining others that were swarming the weights and measures. We disembarked to an organized chaos as excited pilots climbed from shuttles and were ushered through the hallways. I found Hesho and the Kitsun hovering over the heads of the other pilots, looking agitated. Hey, I called to them as I passed. Hesho zoomed in near my head.
Alanik, he said. What is this?
You know as much as I do, I said, then bit off what I was going to say next. That was a lie. I knew way more than Hesho did. I always had. Well, for the moment, I agreed with Vapor. I needed to at least find out what Winzik was planning, as it might be relevant to the future of my people. We fell in with the other pilots. The other flights had lost a few people in training, so we were maybe 45 instead of our initial 52. In their excitement, it seemed like far more. The guide drones led us out of the shuttle hangar. We weren't taken to our normal jump rooms, but directly to the hangar with our fighters, which were quickly being prepped by ground crews. Vapor swore softly. With our starfighters being prepped like this, it seemed increasingly likely that Winzik was going to use them against Starsight itself. Had I really gotten caught in the middle of a coup? Winzik himself stepped onto a mobile ladder for climbing atop starfighters and held up his arms to hush the group of chattering pilots.
You are no doubt frightened,
Winzik called, his voice amplified over the ship's speaker system, and confused.
You heard of the attack on the weights and measures earlier today. Well, we've analyzed the debris from that attack, and we found a destroyed weapon that was human in origin.
The chamber grew profoundly silent. Oh no, I thought.
We have evidence, Winzik said, that the human threat is much greater than the High Minister wishes to admit. Likely there are dozens of spy drones infiltrating Starsight. This is proof that the human scourge has begun to escape from one of its prisons. It is a festering hive of humanity that we were never given the proper authority or resources to suppress. Today, we will fix that. In 10 minutes, this ship will hyperjump to the human planet Detritus. I want you all to be ready in your cockpits, prepared to launch the moment we arrive. Your job will be to destroy their forces. This should prove to be an excellent display of why the superiority needs a more active and well-trained defense force.
It was strange to see him speaking so forcefully, with curt gestures, not even a single my or stutter. As he sent the pilots to suit up, I began to understand the depth of his plotting. He had probably been building to this all along, a display of strength, using his personal space force to annihilate the human scourge and cement his importance. This was what I'd feared from the beginning. I'd been training a force that would be used against my own people. I needed to find a way to stop this, to make good on the peace that Kuna and I thought we could bring.
Excellent, Hesho said from beside me. Finally, they decide to do something about those humans. This is a momentous day, Captain Alanik. Today, we get vengeance against those who wronged us.
What should I do? I couldn't tell him. Could I? I lost my chance as the Kitsun swooped off toward their ship. I spun around, looking for the rest of my flight. Where was Braid? I needed to talk to her. I found Morimer standing beside their ship, holding their helmet, teeth bared slightly. Have you seen Braid? I asked. Morimer shook their head. Scud, where was she?
Alanik? Morimer asked. Are you excited? I'm worried. Everyone looks so eager to get to their ships, but this wasn't why we trained, was it? We were supposed to stop the Delvers, not go into ship-to-ship combat against experienced pilots. I need more time. I'm not ready for dogfighting.
I finally spotted Braid crossing the hangar, helmet already on, the black sun shield down. I ran over and intercepted her as she reached her ship and started to climb up the ladder. She tried to ignore me, but I grabbed her arm. Braid, I said.
They're going to be sending us against your own people.
So? She hissed, the sunshield preventing me from seeing her eyes.
Don't you care? I demanded. This is the last chance humans have at freedom. How can you help destroy it?
They're wild, humans, dangerous.
Humans aren't what the superiority says, I said. I can tell that's true after just a short time knowing you. If you join in this, you're perpetuating a lie.
It will make life better for the rest of us, she said. If people aren't worried about a human empire suddenly jumping out of the shadows and attacking again, then maybe the rest of us can build something worthwhile in the superiority.
Can't you hear how selfish that is? You'd sacrifice hundreds of thousands of human lives so that maybe you can live a little better?
What do you know about it? Braid snapped. You can't possibly understand how it feels to make a decision like this. I can't, can I? I pulled her down from the ladder. She let me do it, moving limply as if her confidence had been replaced with uncertainty. In the shadow of the wing of her ship, sheltered at least a little from everyone else, I did it again. I turned off my hologram.
I know exactly how it feels, I hissed at Braid. Trust me.
She froze, my image reflecting back at me in the surface of her sunshield as I put my hologram back up.
I came from Detritus, expecting to find only enemies and monsters, I whispered to her. I found you instead,
Hesho and Morimer and all of you.
I can't conceive how difficult it was for you growing up, but I do know what it feels like to be hated for something you never did. And let me tell you, destroying Detritus isn't going to help. It's just going to further convince the superiority that they were always right about us.
You want to change this? You want to try to fix this?
Come with me back to Detritus. Tell us what you know about the superiority and about Winzik. Help us figure out a way to prove to the people of the superiority that we are no threat.
Winzik wins only as long as he can convince everyone that we really are an enemy they have no choice but to destroy. Braid hadn't moved. She just stood there, her eyes hidden. Finally, she put her hand up to the side of her helmet, hitting the button that pulled the visor up. Then she pulled her lips back and showed the front of her teeth. An alien expression, and gestured sharply.
Human, she screamed. I've found the human spy.
Chapter 37. Braid scrambled away from me, screaming, as if she hadn't heard a single word of my impassioned plea.
Human! Alanik is secretly a human!
I stepped toward her, a piece of my mind refusing to admit what was happening. Surely she'd believe if I showed her. Surely she'd accept the reality about her heritage, not the lies that she'd been told. I'd gambled on revealing myself to Kuna, and that had worked. How could it backfire so completely when trying to talk to one of my own kind? Scud! Scud! I scrambled away, ducking past a confused Morimer and skidding up to my ship. The ground crew member there, a creature with insectile features, tried to bar my way, but I shoved them aside and scrambled up to my cockpit. I pulled my helmet off the seat and slid down into place, hitting the button that closed the canopy. I was saved by the fact that everyone was so excited about getting ready to go into battle. The general clamor of people shouting instructions was accompanied by the thumps of last-minute supply ships landing in the hangar. The noise prevented most of them from hearing Braid. She, however, ran right for Winzik. So my time was tight. I powered on my boosters and flipped on the acclivity ring, praying that there wasn't some kind of remote kill switch for these starfighters. I briefly heard alarms going off as I hit the boosters and roared across the floor of the hangar, shooting my destructors at the invisible air shield that kept out the vacuum. The blast went right through, indicating the shield was still open for ship passage. I soared out into space and immediately ducked in close to the docks to give me cover if the weights and measures started firing at me. "Embot!" I shouted. Click, 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 scud. I swerved my ship along the docks, but my proximity sensor showed the weights and measures belching out dozens of fighters on my tail. I soared in close to Starsight's shield, the bubble of air that protected the city. I didn't have any idea what kind of defenses the place might have. Surely, at the very least, there would be gun emplacements along the rim. Maybe even that entire air shield could be configured to not let ships in or out. Winzik worked quickly. I already saw ships diverting inside, moving toward the rim and toward me. "Embot," I said. "I'm not sure if I can get to you." I got only clicking in return. I couldn't just leave him. I had to. I knew the truth. I didn't have time to get to him. The knowledge I had inside me, the secret to superiority hyperdrives, the power I had to teleport myself, was far too important to risk. I had to get back to Detritus, and I had to warn them about the impending attack. This wasn't just about me or him or even Doomslug, vital though her kind were. I fought with myself for a moment, watching all those ships, hundreds of them, swarm toward me. Then I turned my control sphere and hit my boosters, heading deeper out into space. I needed to do Grand Grand's exercise. As my acceleration increased, my back pressing into my seat, I imagined myself soaring. Among the stars, the singing stars who serenaded me with their secrets.
"Spencer?"
Embot's voice.
"Spencer, I'm back. What is happening?"
I could feel it. That glowing arrow pointing the way home, the one embedded into my brain by the strange weapon. But I didn't know for certain if I could use my powers without Embot. Did I need some of the mechanical parts in his ship?
"Spencer," Embot said, "I've been trying to change my programming, but it's hard. What are you doing? Where are you going?"
The other fighters were gaining on me, but I saw in front of me a roadway of light.
"Spencer," Embot said softly, "don't leave me."
"I'm sorry," I whispered, my heart wrenching. "I'll come back. I promise." Then I squeezed my eyes shut and tried to enter the nowhere. It worked. This time, I didn't have the protection of superiority technology. Delvers loomed in the darkness, their terrible eyes locking onto me. I screamed beneath the scorn I felt from them, but then that seemed to fade as a single Delver drew close. It surrounded me in that place between moments, like a shadow blocking off the attention of all others. A single hateful entity. I felt a torrent of emotions from it, omnipresent, smothering. It detested the sounds we made, the way we invaded its realm. People were like a persistent ringing tone, constantly in the back of your mind, driving you to madness. It drew so close that as, thankfully, I left the nowhere, I felt it try to follow. It tried to slip through to the place where we lived, the place where it could find all of its annoyances and smother them. I came out of the nowhere screaming, alone, feeling like I'd barely slammed the door closed on a monster that had been chasing me. I had to physically fight against my trembling hands as I turned my ship. Then, I saw one of the most blessed sights of my entire life. Detritus, glowing in the sunlight, a planet surrounded by radiant metal shells. I was home. I approached the planet's shells at a quick speed. The superiority battleship still hung a moderate distance away, but I didn't see any dogfighting right now. Unfortunately, as I drew close, I realized that without M-Bot to guide me, I'd need a flight course from command to get through the defensive shells. I scrambled to input the DDF communication codes and tune the radio to the proper channel. "Hello?" I said. "Hello, anyone? Please acknowledge. This is Skyward 10, call sign Spin. I'm in a stolen ship. Please don't shoot me down." They didn't respond immediately, though I wasn't surprised. I imagined that the soldier monitoring communications would immediately call their duty officer, instead of engaging the mysterious voice of the teleporting teenage pilot. They must have called a member of my team to confirm it was me, though, because the voice that finally responded was familiar. "Spinsa?" Kimmelin's lightly accented voice said. "Is that really you?" "Hey, Quirk," I said, closing my eyes, savoring that voice. I'd missed my friends even more than I'd realized. You have no idea how good it is to hear someone speaking English without a translator.
"Saints above! Your grandmother said she was confident you were alive, but... Spin, you're really back?"
"Yeah," I said, opening my eyes. My proximity sensors suddenly flashed a warning, though I had to zoom them out to see what had happened. A new ship had appeared out of the nowhere, popping into existence near where I'd come in a few minutes earlier. It had a familiar shape, long and dangerous, with numerous hangar bays for launching fighters. The weights and measures. "Don't throw any parties yet, Quirk," I said. "Get Cobb for me ASAP. I'm back, and my mission was a partial success. But I've brought company." Part 5, Chapter 38. I landed my stolen ship in a starfighter dock on Platform Prime, then popped my canopy. I'd turned off my hologram, and it felt odd to see my hands with their natural skin tone. And this place. Had these walls always looked so bleak? Everything on Starsight had been ornamented with color. Had this air always smelled so stale? I found myself missing the faint scent of trees and soil, or even the hint of cinnamon from Vapor's presence. Kimmelin met me at the cockpit, grinning like a fool as she climbed up the ladder, then grabbed my helmeted head in an embrace. She smiled, and I found the expression strange, aggressive. Saints and stars, I hadn't been away that long. But as I stood up and embraced Kimmelin, I felt a lingering sense of disconnect, the feeling that everything in this universe was a painful noise, a remnant of the emotions the Delver had forced upon me. I tried so hard to banish that feeling. Hugging a friend should have been the most relaxing thing I'd felt in weeks. Yet a part of me writhed at it, not because of Kimmelin, but because of me. I imagined that she was hugging some kind of strange creature, like an alien grub instead of a person. Did she know what I was? Did I even know that?
"Oh, the saint be praised," Kimmelin said, pulling back. "Spin, I can't believe it's really you."
"Jorgen?" I asked.
"He's down below, planet sad, on leave. I haven't seen him in a few days. Something about needing R&R?
Well, it happened to the best of us. I'd just been really hoping to see him. Maybe he could knock me out of this strange funk I was feeling.
"What?" Kimmelin said. "I mean, Jorgen explained he sent you on a mission."
"You really did it?
You stole one of their hyperdrives? What about M-Bot?"
My heart felt like it would rend in two. The klaxon alerts went off, blaring about an imminent attack. We both looked at the lights, listening as the intercom called all on-duty fighters to battle. I'll explain, I promised my friend. I'll try to, at least. After...
Yeah, Kimmelin said.
She gave me another quick hug. I was still standing in my cockpit, she on the ladder. Then she rushed down it and ran for her ship. My instincts fought for me to sit back down and fly into the fight, but Cobb had been firm. I was to come and report first. I climbed down and met Dwayne, of the ground crew. He gave me a grin and a thumbs up, then slapped me on the back for my heroic return. I looked at him, befuddled, trying to read the emotions on his face, which suddenly seemed strange and bizarre. I understood his expressions as if on a time delay, like I had to wait for an interpreter to translate them for me.
Scud, what was wrong with me?
You're just tired, I told myself. You've been pushing yourself hard for 2 weeks, all while living as someone else. Indeed, I was hit with a wave of exhaustion as I opened the door to walk into the hallway, but stopped and gave the unnamed superiority fighter a fond look. She was no MBOT, but she'd served me well. Would I ever fly her again? Probably not. She'd be torn apart and analyzed. Access to an undamaged Krell fighter was a unique privilege for the DDF. In the sterile, too metallic hallway, I found a pair of men from the infantry waiting for me. They offered an escort to help me find the way to Cobb, but I couldn't help but be reminded of the guards and guidance drones who'd accompanied me aboard the Weights and Measures. It wasn't that the DDF didn't trust me. It was just that the enemy was known to be able to affect the minds of people, particularly Cytonics. So, well, I guess they probably didn't trust me.